This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mamie Rosenberg.
Immigrant workers say they are essential, but Donald Trump is not in the fight for their lives. With Nadia Bellina, co-executive director of the National Day Laborers Organizing Network. But first, a short selection from Judith Sloan's Crossing the Boulevard.
Hey, I walk on to duro. What duro lono call?
I'm sitting on a wooden crate on a cargo flight to somewhere. The plane lands where I honestly do not know.
Ogun aye duro, ogun idile duro. Ogun osho duro ta mo ni se ni ko gbeyin. Ibi colorful ni won wa wonder there.
There was a box that I was sitting on top of it without knowing what was inside. My friend is a Russian pilot named Melanov. I paid the money. It was not free.
Jenny Tori Itani, oro yin ro mi loju olugbala mi o.
When we landed, I was waiting for him in the cargo until the time he came and picked me up and we went to get the other plane to Istanbul.
Ase nitori ileri ogo tolorun se fun mi ni.
Melanov hands me a passport and visa with my picture and a made-up name. From this point on, you are Piri Christopher, and you are from Zambia. Then he hands me an envelope with a ticket inside. Go to the destination of the flight, and you'll be a free man. I give my boarding pass to the steward and see that I am going to JFK International Airport.
Alabaro, Alabaro, Tani Yoshe, Alabaro for me, Alabaro.
When the plane landed, one of the custom officer came and when he searched my bag, he did find now my document from Zaire. My citizen card, my birth certificate, the birth certificate of my daughter, and my marriage certificate. You have to tell us you are from where because you do have two identification documents. And I said, I'm looking for a United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees because I'm in trouble. I'm looking for a place where I can claim my freedom. And they told me that I could seek asylum in the airport. And I sought asylum in JFK Airport.
Ishoro kilo le okano ti Jesu ko le se fun o se tai lo lo tabi tai ise se ni.
From 3 p.m. to the following morning, 8 o'clock the following morning, handcuffed, hands and feet, crying and crying the whole night. I slept there in JFK Airport. Don't know what's going on to me. I don't really know. And then finally, I was in an orange uniform and they told me it's a detention center and it's not a jail. I was surprised to be in a building without windows and no access to outside life. And there's nothing else to do except reading, praying, and I was writing a book about my life. That's what I did all these 2 years in detention.
Christening, mighty was me, oh. Bobby, angali no ti so. O jojumo ni satan in dode, tori re to son toru o. O muramu ramu lati weni ti o paje. Sumo bi, alabaro kon befu.
When I came out, facing the light, the sun, I fell down because I'm used to the dark. I'm used to the industrial light. Coming now to see the sunshine, I was like dizzy and I fell down.
Alabaro.
And now, even if I don't have anything, I'm enjoying the life because I know that I'm free. There's nothing better than freedom, but I'm still discovering it.
So we are enormously pleased to be speaking with our good friend, Nadia Molina, who works with ENLON, the National Day Laborers Organizing Network, that improves the lives of day laborers and migrants and low-wage workers and builds leadership and power amongst those facing injustice so they can challenge inequality and expand labor, civil, and political rights for all. Nadia, what extent is ENLON involved in a comprehensive agenda for hopefully a new administration to protect immigrant workers?
With regard to hopefully a new administration, I would say that, you know, we're very clear that the current administration is a disaster for our community on multiple levels, that if there were a second term of the administration, that it would only get worse for the immigrant community. Issues like TPS holders who have had their TPS status already canceled and are holding on by a thread through a court process to be able to stay. They're fighting right now to be able to stay and get permanent residency. All of that would certainly get worse under a second Trump administration. But we also have to look at the alternative, right? So if there were a new administration, you know, we're hopeful and we would see it as a potential space. There would be an opening of space where we could fight for something different. On the other hand, we also want to be careful not to have too high expectations in the sense that Biden will be very similar to the Obama administration, and we, along with many organizations, fought many battles against the Obama administration and Obama's policies, in particular around the link between immigration and local law enforcement. You know, sheriffs, police, doing the dirty work for the federal government at the local level. That was an ongoing battle with the Obama administration, which the Trump administration has taken the tools that were used in the Obama administration and extended them and used them in really horrifying ways. So on the one hand, obviously, we would want to roll back, you know, many of the attacks that the Trump administration has made against the community. I mentioned TPS, but there's also DACA, there's also the asylum system, all of that. And then I'll try to push the administration beyond what it has looked at before, right? So look at things like workers who have faced wage theft and health and safety abuse, workers who have stood up to fight for their rights on the job, who should be able to access immigration status as whistleblowers and as people who are fighting for the enforcement of workers' rights. So some kind of recognition of that status, recognition of workers who are working in disasters, which is more relevant now than ever. Day laborers are some of the rebuilding after hurricanes or other wildfires, other kinds of disasters. And so looking for the new administration to recognize the role of immigrant workers in rebuilding. So those are some of the areas we see it as. The question of worker justice and migrant justice is intertwined. You know, we have a worker-migrant justice platform.
Your thoughts on what has to happen with ICE and how they have affected, as an agency, the particular groups of workers that you are involved with?
The role of ICE is the role of the terror of the federal government. Their role has been to terrify, to hunt the immigrant community in ways that only get worse and worse. In the Obama administration, we said it was a rogue agency, right? That ICE would do whatever they wanted, regardless of kind of what the rhetoric was in other parts. And now the entire federal government has the same attitude and is promoting the attitude that is there with it, that is there within ICE. It's an attitude of inhumanity and of really trying to terrorize the immigrant community so that, number one, with the idea that if a group of people can be sufficiently terrified, they'll leave. sort of mass, we call it attrition, right, where they're basically trying to make conditions so miserable that people will leave on their own. And I think the other damage that they do is that by the way that they do that, that they do that enforcement, by the way that they target the community, what they're saying to the rest of the community is saying that this group of people, this group of workers, don't deserve to be in the country, don't deserve to be able to work safely, to be able to exist as human beings. That clearly goes through the entire, right now, the entire administration. And all of the policies are a reflection of that worldview. And ICE is the instrument that's being used against immigrants, against workers, right, to destroy workers and their ability to organize. You know, now we've seen with the way that there are immigration, customs, and border patrol is being used to attack protests in different parts of the country, that the immigration infrastructure is being used to attack all workers, all social movements, because we've allowed it to grow so big and so powerful.
Within the recognition of the contribution of undocumented workers to the economy, they are many times excluded from many governmental COVID workplace benefits and protections, which is not only unjust treatment, but also counterproductive to the healthcare policy of the nation as a whole. Can you give more detail on your current campaign, Y Nuestros Qué, and What About Us, and what some of these policies are?
Undocumented workers, in some cases, have many of the same rights that documented workers do. So all workers have a right to minimum wage, have a right to overtime, have a right to safe and healthy workplaces. So in some cases, the problem is in enforcement of those rights, right, where workers are working in really dangerous health and safety conditions by employers who take advantage of their need for work and of the fear of immigration. Employers take advantage and use it as a tool against workers. Those are areas where, at least theoretically, workers have the same rights regardless, right? Once the pandemic began, one of the things, you know, that was clear that would happen was that when the first CARES Act was passed, one of the important things that the government does when there is an economic crisis is that they use the most important sort of tools that they have, right? And one of the tools is unemployment insurance. When so many workers are going to be out of a job and when it's going to last over time, in this case, what they did was they expanded unemployment benefits. You know, over time, government, you know, they extend unemployment benefits from the limits that they have, which vary per state. That's a really important system that the United States uses to support workers when they're facing an economic crisis as is being caused by coronavirus, right? For undocumented workers, they're entirely excluded from the system of unemployment insurance. So an undocumented worker can work for 15 years in a construction business or in a poultry plant or in a restaurant or wherever and be contributing through their employer, because it's an employer-paid insurance system, but it's paid based on each worker. Through their work, they're contributing to the unemployment insurance system, and yet now, let's say after all these years, when they lose that job and they're not going to get another one because of the crisis, they're not able to access a penny in unemployment insurance. In addition, workers also, you know, contribute through taxes, through state and local taxes, have contributed to the state and local governments and yet continue to be excluded. So the way that we've analyzed it is to say, okay, we know that the Trump administration is not going to look for ways to support undocumented or any immigrants, but in particular undocumented immigrants, and they all specifically excluded workers who pay taxes through an ITIN number, through an individual taxpayer number. They excluded them from even being able to receive the federal stimulus when that was passed, the $1,200, right? They excluded the workers and they excluded their families. So even if they had U.S. citizen children or spouses or whatever, the whole family was excluded from being able to receive anything, which is clearly just an invidious attack, right? The question is, what are the states going to do? What are the localities going to do, right? What is California, New York, Massachusetts, what do all these places where we have, you know, Democratic governors and legislators, what action are they going to take to say, no, we're not going to do the same thing as the Trump administration. We're going to create an alternative that will support workers and families who are living in our state so that they don't have to be left with absolutely nothing in this time of crisis. And so the campaign is, you know, we use the hashtags, right, the ¿y nosotros qué?, which, as you said, is like, well, what about us in terms of the support? And also, essential and excluded, right, because all of the workers are essential in one way or another and yet are excluded from being able to access so many of these supports. And in some parts of the country, for example, California created a fund. They put $75 million of state funding and then additional funds from philanthropy. It was about $50 million. And that money, you know, obviously it wasn't enough to cover anything substantial for the size of the undocumented population in there. So it was a good step, but certainly not enough. And they're fighting for basically a bigger safety net program. In New York, since I'm in New York, it's the area where I'm most familiar. Here we're part of a campaign for an excluded worker fund. And that would be legislation that's been proposed by Senator Jessica Ramos in the Senate to tax billionaires and use that to create a fund that would allow undocumented workers and other excluded workers who are not able to access unemployment insurance to be able to get this fund and have a payment over time that, you know, will allow people to survive. I mean, that's pretty much what it is. And part of the goal of that fund is clearly the economic need, but it's also to address an exclusion that has existed for a long time from unemployment insurance and to send a message of inclusion rather than exclusion in the pandemic.
Nadia, there are particular campaigns with domestic workers, with construction workers, with farm workers, among other things that Emblon is working on. Talk about that, and perhaps you can also give us an overview of how the pandemic, how that is affecting the groups of workers that you are, as a worker for Emblon, involved in.
Well, Emblon, since its beginning, its core membership organizations that work with day laborers. And a lot of them work with day laborers, domestic workers, and other low-wage immigrant workers. There's always been a core organization that organized day laborers, created day labor centers across the country where workers are able to meet with employers there and set wages, set standards, and follow up with employers if they don't pay or if there are any problem issues on the job. The day labor centers are a way for workers to be able to control their work in an organized way as an alternative to the day labor corners, where workers are always looking for work, but a lot of times they're not able to get the information about the employers and where employers will take advantage of that. As I mentioned before, you know, steal workers' wages, et cetera. The creation and the support of day labor centers has always been one of the key components of our work. And in this pandemic, you know, number one, day laborers are among the first to lose their jobs because a lot of employers of day laborers are homeowners who say, oh, well, I'm working on a remodeling of the kitchen, right, or some kind of residential work where they may need some help or some extra work. And those are obviously the first things to go when there's an economic crisis. So day laborers have been devastated in terms of employment in the pandemic. And then the centers themselves, because of workers can't meet in the way that they were meeting. So you'd have, let's say, I don't know, 50 workers come to a center in the morning and then employers would come in, can't have them as gathering spaces, which is a really devastating in terms of the ability to organize, right, and to work collectively. Organizations had to shift entirely to begin to, number one, to do things like build food pantries, which many of them had not done before, but they were, you know, they've been able to collect personal protective equipment, hand sanitizer, food, in some cases, do cash distribution. We've been able to do fundraising at a national level so that the local organizations are able to give some amount of support to workers that they know are in crisis at a local level. So the centers have shifted to become sort of emergency and disaster response and to be able to respond to all of those needs locally. And then, I mean, obviously, the health issue in particular, the Latino community, like the Black community, has been really, really devastated directly by coronavirus. In our centers, there have been, organizers and staff who've gotten sick, who've been hospitalized, members, day labor members. I believe we found in a survey, I believe it was about 80% of the centers in the survey had day labor members who had been sick with coronavirus, worker members who died of coronavirus. So the community has been attacked by the virus. And then the other thing that, the last thing that I would mention specific to that is that in some cases, which I think is like the worst, are situations like here actually in Freeport, Long Island, where there was a day labor center, a trailer, where workers were able to gather and meet with employers during the pandemic, which was like the worst time in the world. The Freeport mayor shut it down and took the trailer and towed it away somewhere, using the excuse of the pandemic and saying that it was not safe to have this. The reality is that that trailer could have been a space to be able to do food distribution, to be able to have PPE, even if workers were outside of it, because it was in the summer, or because through the summer, right? In this case, the local government was, a developer, right? But they want to develop that area. And so for them, it was convenient to use the pandemic in order to shut down a resource for the day laborers. And for the day laborers, it's also devastating because they don't have this resource. I think in different ways, the pandemic has really attacked the community, whether in an individual level, but also in an institutional and collective level of organizing. Obviously, the organizations do amazing work. Are changing, are adapting, are responding, going out, doing trainings on street corners right now and throughout the pandemic. They've been doing health and safety trainings with workers, distributing masks, distributing bars of soap. Like, all of that work is going on. They're doing amazing work, but it's certainly hit the community very hard.
Lastly, the context of xenophobia that all of this is unfolding in, your comments and your thoughts about how the difficulties of doing the work that you've been describing to us within that context, which is being fostered, indeed is the primary campaign slogan, if you will, of the current administration in Washington for its reelection. What should our listeners understand about who all these workers are?
One of the things that we try to focus on our work is that with the administration and its attack on workers and the way that they use undocumented or immigrant community as the prop for their campaign, it doesn't matter what the immigrant community does or doesn't do. In reality, it doesn't matter who people are, right, as workers and as members of the community. It doesn't matter to the administration what their contributions have or haven't been. For the administration, it's just a prop. It's just something that they can use in order to attack and in order to be able to show that it is doing something, right, in this context, and take advantage of people who are, who are xenophobic, who are racist, and who see the immigrant community as a threat. So part of the way that we see the work is, in some ways, it's always to strengthen the organizing of the community itself, to support itself, right? So one of the things that we have is in the mutual aid, in the food pantries, in the food distribution or PPE, all of those things, we make sure that the message that we have with the organizations and with the workers is one of, it's the community, we have in Spanish, it's solo el pueblo salva al pueblo. Right? So only the people save the people, right? So it's, we're going to work and support each other. because we can't rely on the federal government in this case to be able to come in and save anybody, right? That is the most important message. And so Endulon, I think, has always had a beautiful history of using arts and culture, you know, using music, making songs about the census or songs about wage theft. And, you know, now there's a song about, like, using a mask, like using cumbia in order to talk about health and safety. We create our own culture, right? We create our own message, right? We first have to build our own strength and our own abilities. And then after that, sort of going externally, we address it with a message of inclusion versus exclusion, right? So that in the case I mentioned before of the excluded worker fund, that New York State and the other states and the other localities have to make a choice. They can be on the side of the Trump administration and of those who see the immigrant community as a group to be excluded and a group to be feared, or they can take steps towards inclusion, right? And that we make that happen at a local level. We make that happen at every day labor center, at every, you know, every job that a domestic worker gets, that a day laborer gets. At a local level, we make that happen with city, with the village, with the state, and that we don't have to fall for that message, because we make our own message of inclusion.
Well, Nadia Molina, you and Endulon are doing incredibly important work in these very dangerous times. Can you give us your website? Can you give us a way to contact the organization so that people who want to know more and who want to help can join with you?
Sure. And just thank you so much for your coverage of worker issues and of immigrants issues. And I know that you see them intertwined in the same way that we do. So we really appreciate that in solidarity. Our website is Endulon, Endulon.org, so .org. To contact us, you can reach us at info@endulon.org. We have website, we have Facebook, we have Twitter, we have an Instagram, so we you can definitely find us, National Day Labor Organizing Network.
And some wonderful music. Nadia Marin Molina, co-executive director of Endulon, the National Day Laborers Organizing Network. Thank you so much for joining us. And Nadia has brought years of experience in the struggle for immigrant rights to her work. She's received national recognition for her work as executive director of the Workplace Project, fighting hate groups and anti-immigrant legislation on Long Island. It has been a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. You've been listening to Building Bridges, produced by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. Stay strong and stay well.